Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. 2 months ago, San Antonio experienced a devastating flash flood that claimed the lives of 13 people. In the pre-dawn hours of June 12th, over 6 inches of rain fell in just a couple of hours. Rapid runoff sent Bottle Creek surging, sweeping at least 15 vehicles off Loop 410 access road near Perrin Bottle, resulting in these multiple fatalities. Judging from the heartbreaking 911 calls, many of these drivers had no idea that they were in danger until it was too late. Now, Bexar County officials, in partnership with the City of San Antonio and the San Antonio River Authority, are working to change that. The Bexar County Commissioners Court recently unanimously voted for a $20 million investment in a project that's called Next Gen Flood Warning System. And to tell us more about this cutting-edge predictive technology that promises to save lives, we're joined by David Smith, the Bexar County Manager. David Smith, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David.
Also with us is Derek Bays. He is the General Manager and CEO of the San Antonio River Authority. Derek, it's good to have you.
Thank you, sir.
And also with us is Steve Metzler. He is with the San Antonio River Authority Director of Water Resources. And Steve, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So let me start off with David Smith, the general manager at the Bexar County level. I frequently know that Bexar County is frequently responsible for flood issues and water issues in San Antonio.
That's
like
right.
That. And so how did you come to say, okay, this cannot stand. We need to step up and do something.
So after the June 12th events that morning, the county judge's office asked Derek Bays and his team to do an after incident analysis of what happened. And we had done some previous flood control projects on the Bottle Creek, not exactly where this incident happened, but upstream and downstream. We wanted to know, A, how did they perform? Did they do their jobs? We think they did. They just weren't in that location. Anyway, I read the report he produced fairly quickly, and thank you, Derek, for turning that around quickly. And I was pleasantly surprised by just how accurate their modeling of what happened at Bottle Creek was. It was well supported by the evidence they were able to gather after the event. And so when I saw that level of accuracy and modeling, I asked for another meeting with Derek. I said, Derek, can we do this same level of modeling countywide? He said, not only can we, we're already in the process. And I think he's nearing completion within a few months.
So explain to me what this modeling means.
What does it do? What it will ultimately allow us to do is to predict what will happen given certain rainfall amounts on each of these watersheds. What that then can turn allow us to do is say, what happens on this creek if it gets 1 inch an hour for 4 hours? What does the model say will happen at the low water crossings? What if it's 2 inches an hour for 4 hours or 3 inches an hour for 4 hours? Those will be on the shelf, ready to go months, even years in advance of them being needed. That will then allow us to take, with some needed upgrades to our rainfall sensors and water level sensors on those watersheds, we'll have be able to feed those models near real-time information about the rainfall. Based on the predictive quality of that model, we can then communicate with the appropriate responding agency, hey, the model says we're going to have trouble at this low water crossing in 90 minutes. You need to shut it now. And we can send it out, have it shut, that low water crossing shut, before the water even rises to that level. That's the goal.
So someone who's driving and they think they're just driving through rain, they don't know they're going to be hit by a tsunami down the creek, and then you could stop that person from getting in harm's way.
Yeah, think just the same thing that the railroad does at a railroad crossing.
Right. So Derek Bays, I mean, the alert system, who's alerted? Is it going to be like sirens or my cell phone? How does that work?
Well, so what David is talking about with our gauge network right now and these upgrades and the software, so all that gauge data, rainfall, stream gauge data, currently feeds and will feed to an upgraded server and software program that is running these models all the time. Our engineers are monitoring that at the River Authority, and we're feeding that to the emergency operations centers, because the emergency ops folks are the ones that make those decisions to send out alerts, however they are sending that out. Now, you're talking about sirens, are there warnings, that kind of thing. You know, I think all of Texas is struggling with what is the best way to communicate with people right now. You know, we've talked about sirens. The amount of sirens you would have to have across Bexar County are almost endless in order for people to hear, especially if you're trying to put out a text message alert. A voice message, the distance just drops dramatically. And so now, you know, is it a combination of cell phone alerts? The problem is people turn those off, and they have the ability to turn those off. So are there different ways to get that word out? You know, right now our system is tied into Waze and Google Maps. We're in the process of getting it into Apple Maps. So that is another way. But I think it's all about looking for best in class, best in technology ways to get the message out through multiple means to get as many people as possible. We are not by far the only region that is figuring out how can we do this better. But that's the challenge that, you know, we've accepted and the county has accepted and all of our partners to say, let's get information faster. Let's get a better system. Let's get a faster system so that first responders know, that emergency ops folks know, and then they can warn the public or close those gates like David was talking about. But it's how do we get in the decision cycle faster so we can keep people safe?
Steve Metzler, are we getting more rainfall, or is it the development and the more impervious cover? Why is this becoming an accelerating problem?
So, I mean, looking at Kerrville and that Kerr County area, that area that got flooded was not developed, right? So it doesn't really matter so much as developed versus undeveloped as much as what to do with this, all the rain. We've got to have, you know, additional buckets or places to put it. Right. So, David,
but the Kerrville's got all that limestone, might as well be developed.
Exactly. No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I do talk about that a lot with folks. Even though it's undeveloped, it's still impervious cover, because you don't have to stick a shovel two inches into the ground and hit, you know, rock. Right. So it's going to run off pretty quick. There's not a place for it to absorb into. But as David touched on earlier, we had some projects upstream and downstream of that 410 crossing in Bottle Creek. And by restoring it into a kind of a natural channel where it got wider, so as opposed to a dedicated, channelized, kind of a box-shaped stream, if you will, we're returning it back to its natural habitat. So that way the water has a place to spread out, slow down, and be less destructive. And it gives it time to slow down so that downstream areas don't get, even though you've got 6 feet of water going over the top of a low water crossing, by the time it spreads out downstream, it's only, you know, just a few inches, maybe a foot or two deep.
So that we have these concrete channels,
yeah.
And that allows the water just this jet, yeah, down the channels.
It's a very good observation. It does get really high velocities through there. So anytime you can add a white spot in it, it really slows things down.
David Smith, there needs to be public awareness that comes along with warning systems, because I've been a reporter a long time, and I've seen we put up barricades and some people drive around them, don't drown, only to go so far.
They do. And there's new people moving into this community every day. They may not be as familiar as we are with just what flash flooding looks like here, and we are part of Flash Flood Alley. One of the things we've also done with partnership with the River Authority and the City of San Antonio is to put up a system we call HALT, which is High Water Alert System, where this has about 200 low water crossings throughout the county. And when you approach one of these HALT sites, they're essentially signed flashers before you get to the low water crossing. They have sensors, water level sensors upstream, so that when the sensor detects rising water, it triggers the flashers to warn motorists. I think the sign says something like high water, road closed when flashing. A few of them even have automated barricades. Some of them have manual barricades, and we'll be looking at all that as part of this new one.
I mean, even this, you come to a creek, sometimes it says low water crossing, and I don't even know what that means. You know, does it mean it's low water crossing, or does it mean like, don't, I mean,
it means it could be dangerous and flash flood is what it means.
You know, and that stick that has the markings, no one's ever explained that to me.
So the stick with the markings just allegedly tells you how high the water is in that low water crossing. But that's exactly what, I don't know, what was it, 10 years ago, I think, I sat down and talked with our county engineer and said, this is the 21st century. Those little obelisk with cement, with 1 foot, 2 foot, there's got to be something better. And that's where we came up with HALT. One more feature of HALT that I want to make sure that your listeners know about is you can sign up to receive text messages from any HALT site in the county. And it will tell you the status of that low water crossing. If you go to bearflooding.org, the first thing you'll see, and that's BEXAR, flooding.org. The first thing you'll see is a map of the county, and it'll be covered with green dots. Those are HALT sites, low water crossings. You can click on it, a box pops up. It tells you where it is, those low water crossing status, whether it's open or closed, and gives you a button to click to subscribe to either email or text messaging from that particular
site. So we need to raise awareness so people that they know how to do that, that they ought to do that. And so we're going to take a break here. It's a 1 minute break. Our phone lines are open. Got a question or comment about how Bexar County is getting better at dealing with flash floods. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We don't want to go through another flood like we had in June. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Independent journalism needs protection, now more than ever. Leaving a gift to TPR in your will helps ensure thoughtful, fact-based news has a future in Texas. Learn more at tpr.org/legacy.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about improving the flood warning system for Bexar County and how when we get these rains, and we're seeing them now, big rains happening, overwhelming the drainage system. And as we saw in June, 13 people lost their lives. We can do better than that. And Bexar County is leading the way, trying to establish this new cutting-edge predictive technology that would let people know to avoid these low water crossings. With us in the studio, David Smith, Bexar County manager. Derek Bays is with the San Antonio River Authority, the general manager, CEO, and Steve Mertzler is with the San Antonio River Authority, and he is the Director of Water Resources. And let's go to George on the phones. And George, you're on the air.
Oh, this is a great show, David. Thank you very much. My question is, based on a photograph, I have a satellite photograph from 1980 over Bidle Creek. There's a lot of space out there that was undeveloped. In the great meanwhile, in these 40 years, we've had IKEA come in, we've had Rolling Ridge Mall, we've had Morgan's Wonderland, two stadia, enormous parking lots. There's been all kinds of developments along Bidle Creek, up and sideways and above. Is the power of eminent domain available to do like 1,000 meters either side of the creek that you can make it so that we're not having this overflow of water, this runoff of water coming into the, you know, and endangering San Antonio? It just seems like we overdeveloped in the 80s and 90s and did not pay attention to the downstream issues that we were creating as a community. I know a lot of those spaces were unincorporated at the time, but they're now part of the city of San Antonio. So my question is, can we use eminent domain to protect the people?
All right, George, thank you for that. Let's go to David Smith. I mean, is there a property there that needs to be reclaimed for flood control?
So we did some of that associated with one of the projects. We had a buyout program. It wasn't eminent domain. It was an attempt to voluntarily get people to sell and relocate out of a floodplain. With the new, the new FEMA maps that are being developed, more and more people are going to find they're now in a floodplain, and they weren't previously. So we'll have to look at all those kind of tools, how to best mitigate that risk.
And so also on that point, Derek, about growth, we're still seeing phenomenal growth in the area. Are we continuing to allow growth to create tomorrow's problems?
I mean, I think growth is always a balance. You know, we regionally, we want people to come to San Antonio. Not only is it a great city to live in, but there's so many opportunities here. It's good for the region to have more jobs and more, you know, folks being successful here. So, but there is a balance of, and what I call smart development is we want that growth, but how do we manage it well? You know, depending on the entity, you know, the city oftentimes has more tools in their toolbox. The county, because of state laws, has more restrictions on them. But I think you look at a combination when, you know, you analyze the risk, because you can never eliminate risk. I talked about that in Commissioner's Court on Tuesday. You can mitigate it, but you can never fully eliminate risk. And so how do we mitigate that? Sometimes it's, a big detention or retention basin that holds floodwater until it can, you know, more slowly seep out. Sometimes it's elevating low water crossings, you put in a bridge. Sometimes it's, like David mentioned, it's a property buyout for homes that are in the risk area. Sometimes it's elevation of properties to get them further up out of the floodplain. You look at all of those tools. You know, I think, you know, we have partnered with a number of different members of the development community. We've worked with the city of San Antonio on their unified development code. When things are grandfathered in, you know, they were built a long time ago before we knew better. You know, technology changes, weather changes, you know, things evolve.
Climate changes.
Climate changes. And so we're all learning and working to adapt. But, you know, we want to partner with the development community to say, you know, let's get out there as you're building something new and making more, you know, affordable housing or different types of housing for people that are coming to San Antonio. You know, let's be smart about it, because I firmly believe you can make a development that is not only helps mitigate, you know, flooding, so there's less impervious cover, for as an example, but it's also got more green space and trees and other things that draw people in, and they want to live in those types of areas anyway.
Yeah, there's some developers who want to squeeze every house they can into an area, and they got to go, I guess, go to county commissioners and talk about platting and stuff like that.
Unfortunately, we are pretty limited in what we can do to restrict development in the unincorporated area. It's not anything, it's much easier to build densely in the unincorporated area. We're bound by state law, and this is a pro-developer state, so.
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah, sure, go ahead, Steve.
So, being the chief engineer at the River Authority, there's been generations of engineers ahead of me that had a lot of foresight. And so we've got 28 dams around Bexar County that protect against flooding, and that's part of what we own and maintain. There was also, the River Authority is a big sponsor for the tunnels that came through. So there's been a lot of, I mean, George brings up a really good point in terms of development, but we've also, in anticipation of a lot of that, had those dams in place as the city grew up around those.
So let me ask you again, David Smith, about, you know, bearflood.org.
Thank you.
So it's bearflood.org. You go there, you can get notifications about flooding gauges and around the county. Does that information also go directly to our public safety officials, you know, dispatchers, volunteer fire departments, anyone who can go out there and put up barricades and stuff?
I'll let Derek speak to who all sees those notifications.
Okay.
But the simple fact is any member of the public can go to that website, pick out any or all of those 200 low water crossings, and you will receive text or email alerts.
So how will we all be working with public safety officials?
So we're already tied in with public safety and the Emergency Operations Center, not just in Bexar, but we're tied in some of the other counties that we support. But all that gauge network is behind the scenes. You know, there's the public-facing site of bearflood.org. that the general public sees. But behind that is all that gauge data, rainfall data, is feeding both us and the emergency operation centers, and it's feeding our computer model, which is what we're talking about. How do we make that faster and better with the investment that the county has stepped up and done? So behind the scenes, there is a lot more information. There's a lot more computer work going on that is coming to both the engineers at the River Authority, key staff at the city and the county, emergency operations staff. And then it's up to those EOCs, because you want a single point of contact to be pushing out information. And so that's what that emergency operations center does. It is gathering this information from us and elsewhere, and then it is pushing it out to, you know, the local fire station, the police substation, the public works department, whoever is appropriate. You know, they're getting it either through their liaison that's in the emergency ops center, or they're getting it pushed by radio or computer out to the field where they need it.
And maybe knuckleheads like me on the radio could use that kind of information too, to let people know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, we are, you know, we work with the emergency ops center, but you want a single voice. You don't want people, you know, hearing from the River Authority and from the county and from the emergency operations center. That is critical in emergency management, that there's one voice. And so, like I said earlier, the emergency ops center is figuring out how do we push that information out to cover as many people as possible through phone alerts, through, you know, we've been talking about how to use the cell phone towers along with the GPS in your cell phone. So maybe you get an overriding, you know, warning alert if you're driving into a certain area. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we're trying to analyze right now. And it's not just us. I mean, yeah. Kerrville, people across the state, of how do we minimize the risk to people?
Let's go to a caller, Tim. And Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey there. So I had a question about alerting, and a thought occurred to me. Has drone technology been investigated? Drones using AI to predict the path of the flood and fly out with loudspeakers and warn people.
All right. That's interesting. Observation question. Steve, are you using drones?
Yes, we do. We've got in drones mostly for after action. And I know that the EOC has drones as well. And so it's difficult to get them up during the storm itself. But, you know, using the stream gauges to inform our models and inform our decisions helps make those calls a lot faster. So right now the stream gauges and the rain gauge data comes in, and it takes about 45 minutes to process and have an informed decision to pass on to the EOCs. And what we're trying to do with this next generation is shorten that time from 45 minutes down to 5 to 10 minutes.
So we're really short on time, but David, sure. Smith, where are we in this process? When will this become real?
I'll let Derek and the River Authority tell you about implementation timeline, but Tuesday I received direction from Commissioner's Court that they will get the resources monetarily they need to make this happen, whether it's in partnership, the county in partnership with other people or not. They're going to have the money they need to
make it happen. And the city's also working with you. And so when will this happen?
So right now, you know, the River Authority had things already in motion prior to this, but we're looking at, you know, immediate 3 to 6 months for certain actions to happen, to get gauges, make sure they're all working and change the programming. You're looking at 6 to 12 months for getting certain models done, adding more gauges, working on low water crossing gates, and then you're in the 12 to 24 month timeline for some of the longer duration automatic gates and those types of things.
But that bearflood.org, that's live right now.
Absolutely, and it has been for a number of years.
And so anyone can go there right now, sign up for those alerts. If it's in your commute, you want to know if it's going to be safe for you to go, be able to go to work, come home from work, get your family to school, all those things. I think that's essential. I want to thank all of you, David Smith, Derek Bays, Steve Metzler with the San Antonio River Authority, Bexar County Manager, and that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.